The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You can get that satisfaction by staying tuned right here to 710 KNUS. It is me, George Brockler, on The George Show. We are 1 hour away from turning it over to Charlie Kirk, Prager, Gorka, and then right back live and local with Deb Floor from 3 to 4, Stephen Tubbs from 4 to 7. There was an article in the paper just yesterday that if it didn't catch your attention, it's because you didn't see it. This is one right out of our vaunted lefty Denver Post. Colorado politicians want more property tax relief as the state forecasts, wait for it, 26.5% increase in assessed values. OMG. This column is something you need to read. I'm not necessarily saying go and subscribe to the Post. You should subscribe to the Gazette. But if you can find this one free online, and I did, you got to take a look at this one, folks. This is coming for your pocketbooks right now at a time where wages are what they are, inflation is what it is, and we are debating right now about whether or not there will be a recession and how deep it is. This is an issue that's going to hit really, really hard. Oh, by the way, did somebody say energy bills are through the roof too? Folks, we are in for a belt-tightening season here, and to help us have a conversation about how we got here and how we get out is a wicked smart guy in his late teens, Michael Fields from Advance, Colorado. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, George.
First off, did you decide where you're going to college?
I have not. Late teens, it's a little bit off, but not too far.
You're getting close. Now, listen, man, you are as ingrained into this policy stuff as anybody. And to understand how we got into this mess, we have to go in the Wayback Machine, but not that far, to describe what happened with the Gallagher Amendment. Can you bring everybody back to that reminder of what was Gallagher and what happened to it?
Yeah, so basically in 1982, we passed the Gallagher Amendment because of out-of-control property values that were leading to higher property taxes. And so basically what it did was it created this split between how much property taxes had to be paid by commercial or business side and then the residential, our home side. And it pretty much kept residential rates pretty low for a long period of time. But if you remember back in 2020, the legislature put on the ballot a repeal of the Gallagher Amendment. And I think some of the concern was on the commercial or business side, that businesses were taking a bigger hit in property taxes, which was true. But on the residential side, it was keeping them pretty low. And when we repealed that in 2020 as voters, basically it took the check that was on residential property taxes off. And so what we're seeing is at the same time, Colorado home values, as you know, home values have been skyrocketing the last few years. There isn't a check on that of lowering those property taxes. And so we're going to see that huge spike. You mentioned the 26.5% increase. It's going to be even higher in certain areas. Like where we live in Dougco, it's going to be 30, 40% we're going to see. Yeah. And the interesting thing, though, is when that campaign happened to repeal Gallagher, it was that we're going to freeze your rates, right? The idea was, hey, the assessment rate is going to stay the same. People didn't know they'd be paying much more in property taxes in the next few years. And so you have Governor Polis out there saying, well, let's throw a couple hundred million dollars at this. When this is going to be an over $3 billion increase.
Unbelievable, buddy. Taxes. That's huge. Couple things about that. One, this seems like this was so completely unexpected. Nobody could have predicted that this would happen at the time that the legislature put this on the ballot. True?
No, not true. Well, not. I think it was pretty obvious if you looked at the numbers and seeing, that at that time, 2020, home values were going up. They've gone up much more over the last couple of years. But you think about it, just last year, June 30th is the date that we will use for this next assessment. And that was at the height of
property
market, right?
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, and now they've gone down a little bit, but we're going to be paying on the highest amount. Come next year, we'll be paying on what it was like in 2022 in June. And it was pretty obvious at the time that this was going to happen. I think legislators, didn't look at that or didn't
factor in.
They thought they want government to have more money. Yeah. And I think they want government to have more money. So now they're scurrying around trying to find a solution, which I don't think they're going to do, because you have so many legislators who just want government to see that 26% increase, right? They want to see every cent of that. And so that's the problem that we have. But I think the thing that I said at the time when Gallagher was being repealed, I said the most concerning thing is that they don't have a plan for what comes next. We know taxes are going to go up. They have no plan. And here we are 3 years later. They still have no plan.
What happened with the frozen taxes? What happened to that?
Yeah, well, the rate stayed frozen, right? How much of your house is assessed is still close to 7%.
But it kind of doesn't matter if your house is worth
$400,000 to $600,000. Yeah,
right.
So what Gallagher would do would take that and rate down, right? So instead of 7%, it would have been 5%, et cetera, to keep them in check. But the thing I also said at the time was property taxes were still going up by 10%. Local governments were still getting more money than ever because we did have those increases. What it made it sure that we didn't have a 30% increase. Right. And so because we repealed Gallagher, two of that $3 billion would have been returned to the people. Instead, it's going to go to government. And at a time when we can't afford it, right? Inflation's high. People aren't making that much more. And they're going to see this, 26 to 40% increase in their property taxes. Think about seniors, people on fixed income trying to stay in their homes.
Let's talk about where the taxes go, because it's interesting that the state created this problem and now says, hey, we want to do something about it. Who are the direct beneficiaries, though, of the increased property taxes?
Yeah, so it's local government is where property taxes go. And so think education, your local services that you might get, which is good, right? You want those services. Those are the best services. You kind of get worse as you go up the ladder on how much waste happens, et cetera. The local ones are the best and most important. But, we have to find a balance between them getting, that 5 or 6% increase instead of a 40% increase. And it's also at a time when education has more money than ever, right? The governor's put more money towards education. We've had, billions of dollars in COVID money that has come in. And so local governments right now are not struggling for revenue. Even during the COVID times, revenue went up because of the stimulus money. And so this is a time when you have to find that balance between, these are good services that people need at the local level. On the other hand, they don't need a 40% increase in 1 year.
Should the answer then be looked to not from the nitwits under the Gold Dome, but from your local leaders who you actually have more access to and more influence over?
I wish that was the case, but this whole system is set up at the state level.
Oh.
So they set the assessment rates, they set how things are appraised, et cetera. So the whole system starts at the state level where those adjustments have to happen. What we want to get to is to the point where, yes, at the local level, if we vote to increase our mills for a specific thing on the local level, right, then that's fine. That's what we decide to do as voters, to say we want another fire truck. Here's the money that it'll cost, and we can do that. We're not at that point right now because the state is in control of this whole system. So I would love to see more authority and power go to the local level, but I would also like to see the legislature step in this year to say we're not going to allow this 26.5% increase happen.
Wasn't this a constitutional change?
No, so they repealed something out of the Constitution. The assessment rate, how they do assessed value, all that is statutory. They could totally change tomorrow. And a few Republican legislators have said, why don't we freeze the rates right now for 2 years so we don't see this 26.5% increase, then find a long-term solution. They've been talking about doing a long-term solution. In that article, Dominic Moreno and the governor's staff and everybody, we need to do something. They're not going to agree on what it is during the session, and that's the frustration.
Yeah, listen.
We're going to have to go back to the ballot and put this in front of people to say, are you happy with that 30% increase? You're going to get another one in 2 years.
Yeah, but as you pointed out, and I want to get to the petition process, but as you pointed out, simply freezing the rates doesn't do anything to help anybody right now as long as property values are still increasing. What about the idea of cutting the property tax rate, cutting that rate to compensate for the increased property values? Is that possible? And can you envision a single Democrat ever voting for that?
Yeah. So what I was saying that we should do, and what the Republicans are doing, is freezing the assessed value. So saying if your house went 400 to 600, it's still only assessed at 400, right? So not the rate that it's taxed at, but the assessed value. And I think the long-term solution, the only solution that would work right now is capping how much that assessed value can go up. And so saying, you know what, you can have a 5% increase to how much we're going to tax you on your house, but we're not going to have a 40%. And so that is something that, you know, has to be negotiated. I think that the governor would probably be open to a discussion about a cap on how much the assessed value can go up. But I don't think the Democrats look at this as a great thing, right? They might say, oh, this is tough. But they're saying, look, this is going to be a huge influx of money into government.
Yes.
And so they're happy. And so that's where I'm not confident that they get anywhere. I think they keep doing these temporary, here's a couple $100 million, when the tax is going up by $3 billion, and they say they did something.
What should local government do? Can they give back money to their constituents and say, hey, this is largesse. This is ridiculous. I mean, what's Douglas County going to do with a jillion extra bucks?
Yeah, I mean, they could decide, the local government could decide to lower mills. Some of our good county commissioners have done that in the past and said, look, we don't need this much. We're going to send some back, at least on a temporary basis. That is possible. But, you know, half of that is still the education system. And so, you know, they're not going to be sending any money back to the people. And it really has to be done at the state level right now, and to say, we know what these projections are. We know how much it's going to go up. Are we really going to allow this to happen when we have time during session to do something? I think long term is what they need to do right now, but at least a temporary push off until they can come to grips with it. But I have no confidence right now that the legislature, with the makeup that it currently is, and knowing that they knew this was going to happen in the first place, right? We talked about it, we pointed it out, we had this conversation that this was coming, and they didn't care. And I don't know what they're going to do now.
We're talking with Michael Fields. He is in charge of a whole bunch of stuff there at Advance Colorado, as well as being currently the NCAA's number 2 ranked woman in the breaststroke. Congratulations. One of the things that you are known for, besides the swimming prowess, is no single individual has probably done more to accomplish cutting taxes than you have. And we've done it successfully every time you put it on the ballot. Now, the legislature, the last time we were going to go down this road, quickly tried to derail any momentum to adjust dollars downward. Tell us what they did, and do you expect that in the future when we try to address this?
Yes. So last time they rewrote the ballot language that we had in order to adjust you know, what would happen if we cut taxes. I mean, they've tried every trick in the book. They changed the ballot language so that on tax cuts, we have to say that it's going to cut from education,
even though
prisons,
even though
healthcare, right? Even though it's a total lie. They've been very concerned over the years about the work that we've been able to do to cut taxes, but there's always, you know, another route to do it. And so this next year in 2024, we could put another tax cut on the ballot, and we plan to do it. And all we have to do is be specific about where it's cut. So in that bill they passed, they say if it's cut from a certain area of government, that we have to put that on there, and that can be in the ballot language. And so what we're doing right now is
basically figuring out
I know where your vote is, but we can go through it and say, you know, we have to match up the amount that we're trying to cut by the programs that we're going to cut them by. And so we're working on that right now. And as you saw, 65% of voters voted in favor of the tax cut last year.
That's a ton.
Every county besides Boulder voted in favor. Even Denver voted
in favor. Wait a minute. Boulder was the only county that didn't.
Only one. Yeah. 63 out of 64. No surprise there. But you think about it, you know, no matter what they were voting on the political side, on the campaign side, they voted to cut taxes. And so we said, okay, we're going to come back every 2 years then if it needs to, and continue to cut taxes, especially when state government is raising fees, right? Going around Tabor, trying to find every way to get more revenue. We're going to go straight to the people and ask for more tax cuts. So
and
I feel good about
that. Let's be clear. That freaks out the people in charge of the Gold Dome right now. They are horrified. Your buddy Scott Wasserman, who in the Green Lantern comics would be Sinestro, he despises anything that would reduce the tax coffers of government. What else can they do to try to thwart you? I mean, these little band-aids, do they affect support for these measures?
I think they make them harder. But again, we have different routes that we can take to get around it. And if we pick the right program to do it, it could pass by even more, right? If people don't like how government is spending money, it could pass by more. But yeah, you're right. You know, Tabor is what frustrates the legislators so much, because they have to go and ask voters to get more money. And so they're like, we're in complete control. We have almost a veto-proof majority. Why can't we raise taxes? And that's because you got to get voters to agree with you. And then, in fact, we're coming in and lowering them. That's extremely frustrating. But I think the key is, you know, there's still $2 billion more every year that they're getting. Governor Polis likes to talk about saving people money. Like, how are we saving money when we have $2 billion
less?
Yeah,
where's that $2 billion coming from?
Like, you know, it's coming from our pockets. Yeah, you know, and so that's the conversation that I hope these conservative legislators are having, and breaking it down simply for people to say, you know, don't listen to that. Look at the budget, and the budget's going up by $2 billion a year. That's money coming out of your pocket. And that's why I think they're supporting these kinds of tax measures to cut taxes.
There is a reason why you're not putting something on the ballot for November of 2023. Tell folks why that is.
Yeah, so basically you can only put tax increases, or if they want to keep more of our money, on the ballot in 23 and odd years. And so we're going to be on defense this year if they go and try to take our Tabor refunds, for example. There was a bill that they are proposing to try to take all of our $750 Tabor refunds. And so that's the kind of stuff they can put on an odd year. We have to plan for 24 and put measures that I think people agree with, that are common sense, whether it's on crime or taxes or education. I'm worried about, you know, school choice in the state with the legislature
really?
The way it is. So, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt
that they do
this
with
is
that?
A far left. Well, they can do everything from, you know, making it harder to start charter schools to cutting the school choice funding for schools. There's a lot of things that they could do that I'm concerned about. And I think this is one of those times when we need to put something in the Constitution saying, look, school choice is a constitutional right here in Colorado, and it can't be touched by the legislature.
Ooh.
So we're working on a lot of stuff.
So Taborize school choice?
Yeah, put it, you know, where they can't. Everything is statutory right now, right? They could say tomorrow that we're not going to have a charter school.
Unbelievable.
And so we need to make sure that that's in the Constitution. And so those are the types of things that we'll be working on. You and I have talked a lot about truth in sentencing.
Oh, my gosh.
Which we want to bring forward.
We can't do that this year either.
Can't do it this year either. So we have to plan for next year.
Can you tell us, for folks that are still interested, how many Republicans voted to send that Gallagher killing measure to the ballot? And who were they? And what are their phone numbers?
It was enough to any constitution, and this is important for this year too, any constitutional repeal or adding anything to the Constitution takes a two-thirds vote in each the House and the Senate. And so we have a one seat in the Senate block on some, like, repealing Tabor could go straight to the ballot. They wouldn't have to get signatures Republican agreed. And so you had, you know, several Republicans that made it that two-thirds majority that voted to put the repeal of Gallagher on, and it was disappointing.
How many of them are still in office, and did they take responsibility for this? Does anybody ever reach out and go, happy now?
I mean, I think, you know, our focus has been, what do we do now, right? That it repealed, voters voted for it. You know, they spent $12 million to pass this thing. But, you know, what do we do at this point? But there are some that are still in the legislature, but several of them. One has switched parties.
Wait, hold on. Give me three guesses.
You're only going to need one.
Golly geez. It's the guy who took all the Republican money to win and had people walk neighborhoods. God, who is that guy? He's a party fluid. It's going to come to me, but probably after you're on the phone. I think he was up north a little bit there. I think I remember that guy.
Kevin Priola.
Yeah, he now represents a bunch of people who can't actually work to recall him. Where's that going, by the way?
Yeah, so we basically got blocked by the judges we've talked about in the past. We had the signatures in order to recall him. I think that given the makeup of the legislature, that's less likely to happen, and a lot more of this focus is going towards the things we can put on the ballot next year.
And let's be real, it's less likely to happen because the people that would fund it look at it and say, it makes no difference. This would just be really a revenge tour. So that clown gets to represent a bunch of people who not only never voted for him, but wouldn't want him to be their representative. Dude can't get reelected. So what happens now?
Yeah, so basically, you know, next year when that seat is up again, you're going to have somebody who's elected who's conservative and who would represent the district. And so, you know, they have to suffer through a couple sessions of, you know, somebody representing them that
they didn't
vote for, didn't want, et cetera. But, I mean, this is where, you know, with the makeup of the legislature, we have to focus on policies. We have to focus on, you know, stuff that's popular with people that makes sense. And so that's why, you know, a lot of our work at Advance over the next couple of years is going to be getting stuff on the ballot.
Will you be watching the State of the Union address tonight? If so, why? What are you looking for?
No, I won't be watching it. I'm sure I'll you know, look at the highlights or whatever. But I saw somebody tweet that this could just be an email. And I think you were talking
about it before I got on.
It's just like, right. This is so long. Nobody's going to watch it. I probably am more likely to be watching, you know, to see if LeBron gets the scoring title tonight on TNT. So that's a little bit more interesting, knowing that it is a campaign speech. It's going to be, you know, they are how they are. But, you know, I'm sure I'll have to talk about it in some way. And so I'll have to at least read the transcript.
I think some will watch it, Michael, just to see whether or not he nods off in the middle of it or has a misstep. And I mean that seriously. And others to see whatever the performative political stuff is, like who stands up and screams something. You know what I mean? Like who goes the direction of of our buddy Hugh Hewitt and like launches balloons inside, you know, like, whee.
I'm curious just to see, especially, I mean, the economic stuff is one thing, but even the foreign policy talk of, you know, we had this balloon over our country that we didn't shoot down for several days. You know, I think that these, you know, China and Russia and everybody else are getting more emboldened and aggressive. I'm worried about that for sure. And I want to see what he has to say, given, you know, the Afghanistan withdrawal that went bad. You know, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, now this with China. I'm worried on the foreign policy.
Oh, my gosh. Who wouldn't be worried? Michael, where can people go to keep up with what you're doing?
AdvanceColorado.org. You can keep up on all the stuff that we're working on. We're trying to hold the legislature accountable. So definitely plug in with us.
That's fantastic. Michael Fields, I've lost track. Is it Commodore Czar something of Advance Colorado? Thanks for coming on. We'll have you on again throughout this legislative session to remind us of just what a dumpster fire the legislature is. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, George.
See you, buddy. Hey, listen, before we cut away for a break, I got to remind you about some way to beautify the interior of your home without having to go down that road of selling it or buying it. Maybe you're just like, I'm so happy with my house. I just want to upgrade the interior. There's an art to this whole thing. Right? The perfect kitchen doesn't just happen. A guy that can help you do it, his name is Mitch Floria. He's the dude that runs the Art of Granite. That's art with a T and granite with a T as well. The artofgranite.com is the place to go. He is an expert in granite, quartz, marble, anything else you can think of to make a countertop out of, whether it's for your kitchen, your primary bathroom, because Alexa says we can't say master, or any of the other bathrooms in your house. If you're looking for countertop work, this guy's a wizard, and his backstory is tremendous. In fact, when you hire him, make sure you interview him about, tell me your story, tell me how you got here, and you're going to fall in love with this guy. Here's the other kicker. You mentioned KNUS. You get 20% off of labor. You get a kitchen or bathroom sink for free with the purchase of any countertop package. That's an either or that you get to choose right there. He can help with any material, not just the granite. That's just in the name. That's not what's in the store. Go check him out. Drive out there, 6th Avenue and about Colfaxy area. You're going to love the showroom. Give him a call. The phone rings. The phone in his pocket. 303-386-5919. 303-386-5919. Stick around. We'll get to you and some of the text. George Brockler, George Show, 710 KNUS. Who? It's me, George Brockler, right here, 710 KNUS. There is going to be a public hearing held today to address something you're not tracking but could definitely impact cases in which you may be a victim. And that is something called Rule 24, Colorado Rule of Criminal Procedure. Now, it governs jury selection. And up until potentially today, or the days when this thing finally becomes adopted, it had really been purely procedural. It had been a rule that talked about how many peremptories you get if you had a capital case, which don't exist anymore in the state of Colorado, no death penalty cases, how it works, who goes first, who goes second, all that other stuff provides that. Well, now, and because of the left-wing legislature, they have injected into the rules drafting committee the idea that we need to have a change to this rule to now address, and you know this is coming, implicit bias. No joke. And this thing has gotten way down the road, folks. The fact that we're having a public hearing and allow comment on this today, that is telling you that this is on the verge of being accepted as a change. And it is something like we've never seen in the history of the state of Colorado, maybe America. I don't know in terms of this. But one of the changes that they want to make is that, and let me tell you the current system. On the current system, the rule itself sets out the procedure, but Supreme Court law and its progeny dictate some of the other limitations. So like, for instance, Batson. Batson v. Kentucky is an old case. It's a case that just about everybody that's ever practiced law knows about. And it's a ruling from the Supreme Court that says you cannot discriminate against jurors based on their race, perceived race, ethnicity. That's what the progeny says. You cannot use that as a factor and say, well, listen, I have a black defendant. I'd like to keep as many black folks off the jury as possible. That was real, and that happened for a long time, and it was unacceptable to the pursuit of justice. And so the Supreme Court said so, boom, that's it. Same thing with gender under JEB. Can't remember the other party in the case. Same thing. Now, you cannot be discriminated against for those reasons, and that exists. And here's how the procedure has worked up until potentially this ridiculous change in Rule 24. And that is, if somebody thought that you were exercising a peremptory challenge for some race-based, they could say, objection, Your Honor, may we approach? They go to the bench, the prosecutor and the defense, and the defense says something crazy like, they've excused another black man. I say it's racist, basically, or I say that they shouldn't be allowed to do it under Batson. I cite Batson. And the way that the rules worked up until potentially today is that there had to be some prima facie showing that the strike, the peremptory challenge, was made for race. You couldn't just say it. You had to say it and have some prima facie evidence. And many times the defense would try to rely on, well, that person was black. And there's my prima facie evidence. Now, even though that does not meet the standard of prima facie evidence, the right way to go about this for appellate reasons would be for the judge to say, I want the prosecution to give me race neutral reasons for striking the juror. And so even though there's no prima facie evidence, and if I'm the prosecutor, I would say, Judge, first off, there's no prima facie evidence, but because some future appellate court may look at this, presuming they may disagree, I want to give you my race-neutral reasons. And if you could provide race-neutral reasons to the judge as to why you struck that juror, then they were gone, and it was over. And that's how you made sure that this didn't happen. Well, they don't like that. The defense bar doesn't like that. They think that that was somehow funny business, too low of a bar for prosecutors. And so dumping on the legislators, who, of course, want to see the criminal justice system eradicated in its entirety. They'd rather move to a much more civil, hug-it-out system. They've now adopted or proposed this adoption of a subsection 5 to this Rule 24 called improper bias. Now, here's the deal. Here's how it works. First off, objection. Any party may object to the use of a peremptory challenge to raise the issue of improper bias. Even the court may do that. The objection must be made before the potential juror is excused, unless the objecting party shows that new information is discovered. Okay, that makes sense. That doesn't bother me too much. Here's the response that it says under subsection B. Upon objection to the exercise of that challenge, the party exercising the challenge shall articulate the reasons for the challenge. The reasons can be anything. Can be just like, well, that person was a Latino woman. That's enough. The court then, and this is the next section, the court shall then evaluate the reasons given to justify the challenge in light of the totality of the circumstances. Now, I want you to envision a case in which, out of the jury pool, let's say it's Douglas County, out of the jury pool, 12 make it into the box for jury selection, and only one of them is African American. And for reasons completely unrelated to race, prosecutor moves to strike that person. All the defense has to say is, Judge, they've struck the only black person in the box, and you and I both know every judge will then go to the next thing. And right here it says, if the court determines that an objective observer, who the hell is an objective observer, could reasonably view race or ethnicity as not the primary reason, not a significant factor, not as a determinative factor, but merely as a factor in the use of the peremptory challenge, then the peremptory challenge shall be denied. That language right there blows up jury selection in this area as it's been historically practiced since Batson and JEB. There doesn't have to be a single showing of anything, because remember, what we're trying to end here is implicit bias. You don't even know. And the reasons that this committee gives for allowing that ridiculously low bar are also ridiculous. Here's one. Why the objective observer? And keep in mind that all of this is on the internet. You can find all of this, including the comment and the letter to the Honorable Justice Carlos Zamora, former judge from the Aurora Theater case. He was the chief judge in the 18th. Now he's on the Supreme Court, and I think he's the in charge of the rule stuff. Here's why they say they need to have the objective observer. First, it allows the judge to give some distance in sustaining the objection to the peremptory challenge without telling the attorney that the judge personally perceives racial animus behind the strike. I don't want there to be that distance. This should be about trying to end overt racism, not this garbage implicit bias part that you can't disprove. You can't disprove it. I want the judge to have to say, I think you, Mr. or Mrs. Prosecutor, are doing this for race-based reasons. That is appealable. You can look to the record to see whether that's a real thing or not. But to simply give this objective observer, well, who the hell can overturn the objective observer standard? Well, the judge was there, and they thought it was an objective observer could have seen. And here's the other part. Reasonably perceive that it is a factor. And by the way, the standard used to be could versus would, right? The standard used to be would, that it would cause an objective observer to conclude that race was. Now they've moved it to could. So now you don't think about how low that standard is. Now you invent some objective observer and simply say not that it would cause them to think that race was a factor, but it could. It might. Could is might, folks. So now some faceless, nameless, objective observer, defined by really no one except the judge, if they might perceive that race, and here's the other part, not a significant or substantial factor, but merely a factor. And here's why. And this is from their comments. The disagreement over could versus would is largely based on how inclusive a set of circumstances one wants to use to prevent race and ethnicity from being a factor. Oh, my sweet mother of God. If the goal here is to presuppose that prosecutors are engaging in implicit bias in their jury selection, then this is the answer. Of course, there's no evidence of that because we have a standard in place for judges to overrule prosecutors' removal of jurors for race reasons. And they have. They just haven't done it at the clip that folks think on the left should be there. But here's the other killer thing about this. They list a number of factors that cannot be used to say this is why I'm excusing the juror. Here's one, and this is under subsection E. Folks, this stuff is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Reasons presumptively invalid to provide context for the types of rationales that do not support the exercise of a peremptory challenge. And by the way, not against white people. This is not about white people. The following are presumptively invalid reasons for a peremptory challenge: having prior contact with law enforcement. Listen, if I have a case where the credibility of the law enforcement officer is the decisive factor, in my opinion, on whether this case is winnable or not, and I say, here's one of the factors I want to consider, whether jurors have had prior law enforcement contact with it. Now, there are other questions to ask, but now that's not a reason. You could have a dude that says, yes, I've been arrested by the police 47 times. And you might think to yourself, maybe that cat isn't going to be good for the popo, and I need to rely upon their credibility here. I don't want that guy. They're like, nope, that's presumptively invalid. Can't use that. How about expressing a distrust of law enforcement or a belief that law enforcement officers engage in racial profiling? Folks, bias is the number one reason you get rid of jurors. It's the inability to sit and be fair and impartial. And now if someone sits there and say, I don't trust cops, I think cops are liars, and I think they target blacks unfairly. If you're a prosecutor, that can no longer be the basis for you removing a juror from a case in which you may have a minority defendant and you have to rely upon the testimony of police. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? If you had a juror that sat up there and said, you know what? I think most kids that accuse parents of sexual touching and sexual conduct, they're doing it for attention. I think that they're doing it because they're kids and they get manipulated by the other parent. I'm presupposed to believe that most of this stuff is made up and it's an attempt to destroy men and break away their rights to be parents to their kids. If you said that in a sexual assault on a child case, who on the planet Earth would say, I think that cat could be fair? You would kick that dude off. In fact, you might even get that dude kicked off for cause, but you certainly have a peremptory challenge. Not here anymore when it comes to, I don't trust the police and I think they target black people. Are you kidding me? Wait, there's more. Having a close relationship with people who've been stopped by law enforcement, arrested, or convicted of a crime. I've never heard of that ever being used once. Living in a high crime neighborhood, never heard of that being used, not a single time. And again, I've only done this for 28 years at every single level of government, municipal, state, federal, and military, on both sides, prosecutor and defense. Never once have I even heard a story like that. Receiving state benefits. Again, never, ever, never have I heard of that. Not being a native English speaker, I've never heard of that either. What this really comes down to are the first two. These are folks that do not want people to be excluded from the jury because of living a life that brings them into multiple contacts with law enforcement, or who come right out and say, I don't trust the police. That's a bias, folks. I don't trust the police is a bias. I believe the cops are liars. That is a bias. What other witness would we tolerate that for? And none is my guess. None. But now we are about to, after today, put this into the law by way of the Colorado Rules of Criminal Procedure. That's what's a possible here. And we're going to change this so that future jury selection has to allow more jurors who distrust cops, don't like cops, have been contacted multiple times by cops, and they get to sit on the jury where you're a victim. Imagine, do you think you're going to be treated fairly by that system? You're victimized by someone from a certain socioeconomic background or a certain demographic. You think you're going to get a fair shot in court with jurors who get to harbor that bias, that internal feeling about the people who showed up to either rescue you, help you, or investigate the crime against you? This is for the left, folks. This is for the anti-cop, anti-justice system. You have it coming. It's society's fault crime occurs. Those are the people that give birth to this nonsense. Those are the people that give birth to this. And by the way, those are just the unanimous consensus things that grew out of this. Uh-huh. The other stuff in this letter, which comes from a very prominent defense firm in the Denver metro area, are even more bonkers. The things that don't have consensus, even more bonkers. Like, they don't want to be able to exclude jurors who are accused of sleeping through jury selection. Huh? What? If you can't stay awake through this little mini job audition for something that's a civic... But there are people out there that voted for this that would also support that. I wish I could tell you how to derail it. I'm not sure it can be derailed, but you need to be aware that it's out there. The criminal justice system is under siege from the people in government and the people who have access to government right now. This is not the same criminal justice system we've had in the past, and it's certainly not the one that we deserve. But stick around. I'll let you know how it goes. Before I cut you loose, though, for our last and final break of the show, as always, at about this time, I tell you about something special coming up called Valentine's Day. Folks, that's coming up right quick. In fact, it be a week from today. I was supposed to be in trial on that Montrose case where we beat down the sheriff and the DA over their nonsense and hiding evidence from us. I'm sorry, hiding's too strong. Withholding. But Valentine's Day is coming up. You have a week left. Try to come up with that thing that is going to convince that person that you love, that you think of them in such special terms, you are willing to drive out to a very easy to get to place called Littleton Jewelry. Right there south of Hudson Gardens on the west side of Santa Fe. If you're going to or from Aspen Grove, you're going to or from anything on Hamden, it's just so easy to get to. You just turn right at the jewelry repair sign. You go in there and you check out their selection of stuff. And they do all the traditional jewelry stuff that you get from the malls at a better price with better customer service at Littleton Jewelry. And that is the buying and the selling of the gold and the silver and the platinum and the jewelry and the fixing the watches and the coins and all that other stuff. But they do custom jewelry like nobody else does it. And they involve you in every step of the process, from description to design to 3D imaging to a 3D model, wax model. That's what you get, and it becomes that legacy piece, that heirloom quality piece that when you give it to someone, you know it's going to live on in your family longer than you will. Go check them out at Littleton Jewelry. You can check them out online, too, littletonfinejewelry.com, littletonfinejewelry.com. All I ask is when you go in there, tell them you're a 710 listener. They're going to shout back, "We are, too. We love it." Stick around for that last break. I'll go through some of the texts. If you want to call 303-696-1971, it's George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here, 710 KNUS. As always, if you call, we try to honor you. Nick, you're on 710. What do you think?
Well, to me, this is just another piece of the puzzle. The left has mounted a very successful campaign to overturn everything that we consider sacred, and this is just one piece of the puzzle. They have a master plan to get rid of our society as we know it and replace it with their utopia. It's that simple to me.
What do you think the goal is of a rule change like this? I have my own ideas, and I've said some things.
The goal is to make it very, very difficult for people with conservative views to get anywhere. We'll be checkmated every time we turn around.
I think it's this rule change that I talked about. I think it's more insidious than that is, and they're trying to make it harder and harder for prosecutors to earn a conviction. Even when there's strong evidence and they can get beyond a reasonable doubt, when you force jurors onto the jury panel who have a bias against police, distrust the police, think that they're targeting people of color, how in the world are we going to score any convictions, even when it's righteous to do so? And that should be every time.
But you understand that. You're a smart guy. They feel that anybody who committed a crime was a victim. Society did it, and that's why they did what they did.
I don't know how many other states have something like this. I presume we're not the first, although we sure do lead the way on a lot of garbage changes to policy and stuff like that. But I'm super interested to know what's going on, and I just don't know that we're going to get the answer without a change in the government.
That. Yeah. There's a bigger picture. There's always the big picture. This is just one little move, a chess move in a bigger picture. That's the way I see it.
You might be right, man. Hey, I appreciate the call. Stick around for tomorrow, too. We're going to talk State of the Union. I'd love to hear from you, Nick, on that one, too. Listen, that just about does it for the show today. My thanks to Michael Fields, Commodore of Advance, Colorado. We got more calls coming in right now. I just can't get to them. And the text, thanks. There's a ton in here, and I just can't get to those as well. Great conversations today. I will let you know more and more about what happens with Turkey and Syria and a big bad balloon, but we're going to tear apart that State of the Union tomorrow. How about Arash and Ted? If you haven't heard them before, it's well worth the wait. Stick around. George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.